Emily Harmon, and today I'm actually not with Gwen, I'm joined by
Victoria Torres in La Palma.
And we're in La Palma. So, yeah, I'm super excited to be here with Victoria today, as I have been a big fan of her wines for some time, and as many of you know, I'm a huge fan of volcanic wine, and here we're on the volcanic island of La Palma in the Canaries. What makes La Palma so special?
Nice. Well, nice big question, Emily. First of all, it's a pleasure having you here. We've been together yesterday and today, driving around the island. Yeah. So La Palma is the most northwestern island of the 7-8 Canary Islands, say so. It's 700 square kilometers surface island, but quite high in altitude. We're talking about 2,400 meters, so that makes the island like a mountain itself, emerged from the bottom of the sea. A volcanic island with lots of contrast to it. That makes the island special, because of the it's a tiny island that can be considered quite green in some parts of it, and very desert-like almost, in this volcanic raw mineral recently like erupted kind of material in half of it, which makes the island quite spectacular in that way. Also, from the point of view of the vegetation, the native vegetation adapted to that. Also, the way that those winds coming from the ocean affect the island in the different exposures makes the island different after each bend that you cross. And from the point of view of the viticulture, well, we have a history of 500 years, more or less, after it was conquered by the Spaniards. We are quite close to the African,
Not far from Morocco.
From Morocco, yeah, yeah. That's right. So we, the plants arrive, the vines arrive with the conquerors at first, and from different parts of not only Spain but different parts of Europe. We have a huge influence here, especially here in La Palma, from Portugal, for example. And you can see that in the varieties, for example, in the way they are conducted, or
the way they're grown, and I guess the way that they're trellis, if they're trellised or not trellised,
but they're exactly also that
sort of canopy management and everything.
But it's a great place, I think, in such a small surface, to see how viticulture is adapted to this different type of soils. Different richness of the soil, and how the plants and the varieties adapt better, and here and there, how people have wisely, by experience, thought about it and experiment with it to get to the optimum management of it, of the lack of water, or to the opposite situation as well, yeah. On the island. So I think all of that makes the island a complexity on its own. Also, let's say that it's an island with no with very old vines, ungrafted, and it's kind of a reservoir of old varieties, some of them disappear from some other parts. And it's also interesting to me to understand the opportunity that, that brings this island to understand viticulture traditionally. That it's been maintained very much in the same way for centuries. So the composition of the plots, it's been made due to that understanding of the landscape, of the climate, of the type of wine they wanted to be making, and less to modern styles, for example, or even modern or other not in in local varieties as well.
I mean, I'm still kind of soaking up everything we've seen the last few days, and it's been, for me, it's been kind of, it's been a real revelation to come here, because I knew it'd be beautiful, because I'd been to Tenerife before, and I was kind of expecting maybe something more similar to that, but actually it's not. There's a totally different vibe here on this island, and then it's not just one volcano, there's loads of them, which I didn't know until I got here, I'm embarrassed to say, and some of them are still active.
Yep.
Which is also interesting. And then it's like sort of the differences in terms of where the vineyards are. Like, we're in the south of the island now, but we were at that vineyard in the morning,
Las Machuqueras.
Mm-hmm. Oh man, that was not close.
That's a difficult Machuqueras. One.
and it looked like, I mean, it really looked like we had landed on the moon almost, because it was just like volcanic, you call it volcanic ash, right? But it looked like sort of rubble. And there were, you know, and no houses in sight, just the ocean there, and a mountain, which is also a volcano.
Yeah, yeah. And in terms of color, that's black.
Deep black.
See, we are now in autumn, and already the leaves have gone. But any time of the year is beautiful. But springtime, for example, or harvest time, that greenness
as
a contrast to. To that is amazing, because apart from in some areas like that one that you mentioned before, Las Machuqueras or Los Llanos Negros, where the Malvasia grows, nothing else would. I mean, apart
on
from
soil.
So that's amazing as well.
And then to see those vineyards there, where we're like pretty much on the sea, staring out into the Atlantic, and then going up to 1,200 meters in a forest which is grown on the volcano, and it's the rockiest forest I've ever seen. Like, it doesn't look real, so it looks like something in a car racing game or something. It's really bizarre, but in a really strikingly beautiful way. And then we're up there, and with this very dramatic drop down to the coast, and these very fresh, cool winds as well.
Yes.
So it's just, I mean, they're really unique, unique spots. And I think the thing that I find impressive about looking at the vineyards here and the landscape is just like the abundance of sort of countryside surrounding everything. So it's got a very kind of idyllic vibe on this island. It doesn't feel touristy.
No, it's quite rural.
Yeah,
and it's quite and it's quite wild as well in those areas where there is no population settled and all that, so feels wild. You have these beautiful native vegetation all around, and as you said, I think there is only one plot that I cannot see the sea from in all the plots that I have all around the island. So it's very much there. It doesn't matter how high you are or how hidden you think you are, because you getting there is almost like
you're
an adventure
being
in itself.
Seen by the sea,
but it's there and reflecting light as well from wherever. So it's very beautiful.
Yeah. Mm. No, it's incredible. And then the video. I'm just staring at my camera when I'm saying that. The thing that strikes me that's also interesting is one, the ungrafted vines, but the unique ways in which they're grown.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we were seeing vines that were pretty much almost growing along the ground, but just propped up.
Mm-hmm.
And then also types of vines that just grow horizontally because they've adapted to the climate here, to the wind, right? Mm-hmm. That's what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Listan blanco gacho. Yeah.
yes. Here in the south, especially in the east side, where you know, that side is more heated by the affected by the winds coming from the ocean almost permanently, and they can be quite strong, can be a limiting factor. So we've been to that area where we have to build walls of stone to protect, only to protect the vines, which would be planted alongside that wall, and of course the plants would be trained so that they don't, you know, that they are closer to the soil anyway, lifted up by sticks. That's part of the management of the part of the work that we do during the year as well. It's kind of an individual pergola on its own.
Yes.
See, so in each you know, each plant receive it's quite freely the way that we approach the pruning or everything. So it has to do very much with each plant. So it's a pergola. Every pergola would be very different to the other one, and there is we always talk about an average of age in our plots, above 80, 90, 100 years old. But they are the way that we also replant would be using what we called in Spanish acodo here in the Canary Islands, the margullo, which is using a branch and burying that branch.
And then the second plant grows from that branch.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. So this.
And do you ever cut that branch?
Yes, yeah. Yes, we do.
Well, how long do you wait until you cut that branch?
Well, in normal circumstances, so with enough rain, etc., 3 years in the area of here, the South Eastport area, would be enough. Now I don't think those new plants would get along.
You need to leave them longer.
They would, yes, yeah. Yes. That's so see, and the interesting thing you mentioned before, and how the plants adapt evolutivamente, yes, to the fact that it's windy there all the time. So they, this listan blanco gacho in particular, just grow. You know, the shoots will just come. You know, so that they organize themselves or horizontally.
Okay. Yeah.
So you don't have to do much about that. So that's the way. Also has to do with the fact that the plant is more efficient in the use of water, so that is lower that way. So
yeah.
So there are a few things there. And in the north of the island, northwest, we train our plants in bushes.
Yep.
So it's very different as well.
Oh, it's amazing. And your main varietals, so we have got some wines here to try, but the main varietals that you're working with, for everybody listening.
Yes.
So white grapes.
Yes.
Malvasia is a good one to that most people should be able to remember.
Yes.
But it's an aromatic Malvasia, right?
It's an aromatic Malvasia.
Yeah.
It's this Mediterranean one, yes.
Yeah.
Well spread all over the Mediterranean, but then coming to this... like Atlantic side, we believe through Madeira in our case, centuries ago, well adapted here and there, and there is a very nice spot here in Fuencaliente from which we source the Malvasia. We grow there for naturally sweet Malvasia.
Which we're going to try at the end, right, today?
Yes, yep. Yes, and for dry Malvasia. And then the most common one, variety, white variety on the islands, and also this one would be Listan Blanco.
Yes. Also known as Palomino.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Albillo Criollo, which is local from of the island. That would be Bijariego Blanco as well.
Yeah.
And that's a red grape. The main one for me, my winery, would be Negramol.
Mm-hmm.
But then I work with other two nice ones, Listan Prieto.
Which is also known as País.
Sí, yeah. And Listan Negro, which is indigenous to the islands as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So shall we start with tasting?
Shall we, yes.
And then there might be some questions coming up as we go. So we're going to start with, what are we going to start with?
What about starting with the Rosado, for example?
Sounds great. Yeah.
Yeah, Rosado of Negramol.
Okay.
By the way.
Lovely.
So this is what vintage? This is 2018.
Mm-hmm. All of the
Rosado.
Wines.
Rosado.
What?
Chenoserapia. Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Sorry.
That's all good.
Like that.
This. I'm a big fan of your rosés and something, one of the ones that we're not trying right now, but we talked about yesterday as being one of my favourites is your clarete, which is a traditional thing here.
Yeah.
When it's a co-planted field to have white and red grapes.
Yes.
Made together into kind of this really beautiful.
Yes.
Rosé.
Yes.
Light red.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Nice wines to drink. And I think it's the one... speaking more clearly about the wine culture, the traditional wine local culture here. Mm. Yes. So this is a Rosado of Negramol, 2018. I've been making Rosados for a while, almost every year in the past 5 years. To experiment with this type of wines, and I then ended up bottling this 18 because I think it got closer to the idea of a rosé that linked to my house in first place. That was important for me because, you know, I'm a fifth generation of winemakers and wine growers, and when I when I understand the techniques in making rosé, these modern techniques or whatever, I can't imagine my grandfather or my father applying such techniques. So
you've kept your winemaking quite traditional still, would you say? In some aspects for some wines.
In some aspects, yes.
So there's kind of a nod to the past, but you've changed quite a bit too.
Yes. I think. I would.
Digging around for an answer.
No, I just see. Maybe I'm just evasive because I'm. It's nothing planned. It's just I think I'm quite adaptive, I guess, okay. And the context that I'm working in and with is very. It's not stable at all. Mm. So. One need to be adaptive, I think, and it's not that I have the idea that I don't want to change a thing. It's just that I have to find the best way that I understand the things, the way that I see them and I observe them, and that takes time, and knowledge and all that.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. And for example, this rosé is an opportunity to use. Very old machines that I have the luck to inherit from my family, and I think that and I like to maintain this kind of profile of wine because I think it brings it brings to the table something that is important to me, to my table first. Of all, yes.
Yeah.
See, so using that old machine means that it's what we call talagar, which is made out of thea wood. Thea would be the heart of the Canarian pine, those huge ones that we saw in the north of the island today. And it's like a pool of wood, open. And then there is a mechanism that helps the pressing by using a huge stick of wood that goes on top of this material that we want to press, helped by a rope. So there is no, these more maybe common nests
baskets,
exactly. Yeah. So it's with a, so we macerate there, we treat with the feed, whole bunch, open maceration, so plenty of oxidation there, etc. And it's thought as a wine, as all the wines, I guess, not thinking about a wine to be drunk in a year or whatever, but when you have the chance to open that bottle, it's enjoyable, whether it's 4 years' time, this first year, or whenever.
Yeah.
And telling you things about the evolution of this wine in the bottle and the character of the variety maybe, and the year, but you know.
This is, for me, it's lovely. I mean, it's funny because when I drink it, I almost don't want to even define it as a rosé. It's just so pleasurable. And I mean, it's got this kind of crazy colour that looks a bit like it could be from the Jura almost, because it's got this kind of lovely kind of orangey pink tone to it.
Mm-hmm.
But what I like about this is it's just, I was saying it reminds me of some of my favourite rosés, not because it's similar to them in its flavours, but just how it has that lovely contrast between some fruit flavours and this kind of aromatic tone to the wine, but then at the same time savouriness as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's really, it makes me really excited to have food with this rosé as well.
Yeah, I think it's, I agree with you. I think
there's structure there, there's acidity there, there's a nice shape to the wine. It's like quite serious. It's quite a serious wine.
So we've been to this plot yesterday also. This is a barranco, so this is a slope again, but it's a slope in the northwest of the island, 1370 meters
just
high.
Just where the Negro Mole's at the bottom of the slope.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And very old vines work organically for many years, and I had the chance to join in some years ago, and more gradually co-work with the owner, which is a pleasure and a privilege. So this is, I don't know, this is also a celebration, you know, 2018, the possibility of making a wine out of that plot that I almost just got to get to know is a chance for a celebration as well. Yes.
And in terms of working organically, was that the way your father worked? Is that the way it's always been in the family, or was that something you moved towards?
There've been como se dice, drifts, as long as I remember, and as I understand, there was this major work in organic, like everywhere else, I guess, and then at some point industry got in, and for people more and more was, I guess, easier to get into that kind of promises in a way.
Yes, quick fix.
See. So and for my father, he worked organically most of the time, and then there was a time in his life where he had some health problems, etc. So there was a bit of a change there. My family plots are located here in the south, and if we think about these very poor soils, so there is no herbicides needs.
Because there's not really any weeds growing, is there?
No. So they, if there are any weeds, they are taken manually.
Yeah.
See, but there were these other, like, I don't know, in other chemical products, I guess, during the cycle of the plant that maybe might were used. So that's the thing. So in my case, when I got in, for me, farming, there is no other way of approaching farming than in a respectful way for the soil where I'm growing my plants that are going to produce alimento to feed us, right?
Yes.
So there's an important link to health in this great connection, human place that I absolutely I mean, that's no other way.
But we could see from other vineyards today that not everybody is working organically, so what you're doing is less common, right? Like, the way you're working is a little bit different to other, not all producers, but
yes. Well, yeah, let's talk about these, because the context here is working in the vineyards would be the people working in the vineyards would have the vineyards as a second or a third income. Most of the time they keep on working the vineyards for
their own consumption, their own personal wine that they make from their own vines. So there's lots of tiny plots everywhere, isn't there?
Yes. And then in that context, so less and less young people taking over. And also this dynamic going on, like when you get in the river and you let yourself go with the river somehow. That's how I've seen that. And so when I got in, first of all, I'm a woman in a context of men.
Yes.
So from the beginning,
I can relate.
But from the beginning. And I'm always.
I imagine it's even harder here, actually.
But I always comment that for me it's been a space of freedom as well, because I think I wasn't stared that much because I'm not one of them.
Yes.
Somehow, and I'm not sharing those social areas where they exchange. So I'm not exposed. I'm not exposing myself to any criticizing from the part or any. See,
yes.
So I've maintained that freedom space for myself. So I've been doing very much what I thought I wanted to do or what I thought I had to do, and I've been like stare at or watch from far away.
Yes.
And here you get trust or you get support most of the time or agreement with what you're doing or even showing the results.
Yes.
That's very, very important. And that's what matters to me, and I'm very happy when now I'm asked by someone older than me that it's been longer time, because maybe they've learned that I was doing differently and I got good results and maybe that works and can work.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So it's like, yeah, with someone going through another path and people wanting to know how it's like going through that path.
Yeah, interesting. That's nice, though. It's nice that your sort of hard work kind of pays off for that. It's kind of undoing, finding your way in anyway, just through doing the work, basically.
See.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Shall we try the next wine?
Yeah, let's do.
So the next wine we have, very excited about.
What should we do?
Shall we leave the two whites for the end?
Let's go for the Negramol.
See? Great. So this is 2018 Negramol.
Yeah, so another expression of the variety Negramol. A variety that, on the other hand, hasn't been well valued most of the time, but is quite common in La Palma. It's the most common red variety in La Palma. And is, I wouldn't say it's well adapted everywhere, but it's been planted everywhere, different altitudes, different exposure, different type of soil, and you can see how it behaves here and there and the different expressions of that. And I think we yesterday have tasted some of those different expressions in the winery, right?
Yes. It's funny because the first time I tried your Negramol, and I don't know what vintage it would have been, maybe possibly 15 or 16, I just remember thinking, wow, this is a great variety that can make some serious wine, because of when I'd read wine books about it, obviously they were just like, oh, it's a workhorse grape variety, it's not, you know.
Yeah.
But actually I just love the aromatics, like it almost has this kind of like rose, like almost going into like rose petal kind of floral tone to it, but then sort of savoury at the same time, sometimes herbal and
How
would you describe this? How do you find it to work with? Like, what would you eat with this? Like, what's your, I don't know, tip for people that have never tried this before?
At home, this would have been always our table wine. Negramol, every meal, Negramol on the table. So quite often, anything that we eat. So any pot of soup with beans yes. in it, vegetables, but also light, well, also light meat, white yep. meat.
Rabbit.
exactly. But pasta or...
Yeah, with tomato also, sauce or something.
Si, si, would yep. go with it, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, and for the wine making of this wine is well, my harvest lasts 2 months more or less because of the characteristics of the island and the fact that I have plots of Negramol, for example, from the 350 meters above sea level, east side of the island, and then moving like in a scale of ripening times up to the 1,400 meters in the north. So there is the gap, the temporary gap. And so sometimes or often or every time when there is fermentations already done and almost one wine perfectly done in the winery from the August harvest yep. pickings, we are starting with some other Negramol in the north.
Yes, wow.
See, so in the end, so the plots for this wine are treated like separately, of course, and age separately in the barrels, and then finally we decide what's the blend for the year. So this is what I called vino de la isla, because
yeah, I was literally thinking this is like a trip around the island.
Yes, it is. It is. Yeah. See, and makes it interesting because making wines these, you know, like not intervening or not without additions or whatever. So. Makes it interesting also the tool that provides as well, which is when there are area, you know, there is the expression of Negramol like fresher and more drinkable in some areas, more ethereal in a way, and then you have some others more like earthy ones, more structured, more fruity ones, or lacking maybe sometimes that freshness. So coming together, see, and finding yep. balance is a very nice exercise also.
I can imagine.
See.
So this is beautiful. It tastes even purer than the vintages before.
Thank you.
Really, are you happy with this wine?
I am.
Yeah.
I am. I like the lightness to it, the kind of purity to it. Yeah.
I mean, just I've liked it so much that my glass is pretty much empty. Like downed that wine. How to drink a glass of wine in 2.5 minutes. Just drink a glass of Victoria's.
Nice.
Delicious.
Thank you. Shall we go for the other one?
Yeah, that sounds great.
How do you say that? Four in a row.
Four in a row. Bang. Yes. Whoop. Okay, so now we're trying 2017.
No, 18 as well.
Oh, it's 18. Sorry, I just saw that cork and...
See, because we exchanged. Do you want to rinse the...
It's like a waste of wine.
Well, we are in the garden. It's going to... The salt is going to...
Yeah, it's going back to where from where it came from. Like we all do one day. And
so that's Malvasia.
So Malvasia Seca.
Seco.
Mm-hmm. Seco.
See, that's the word for dry.
Dry. And it's number 4.
Yeah, see, the way that I put those numbers on the labels is only for myself. Like,
okay.
Kind of. So I don't forget the time... the order they came in my catalogue, my head, kind of. See, so this is an 18 Malvasia, and I started making dry Malvasia in our family winery back in 2014. Before that, we use the Malvasia only for the naturally sweets, which is the traditional wine and way here.
You said you kind of had to twist your dad's arm about that, right?
Yeah. I had to convince him. See. And it was easy anyway.
Yeah. Well, the proof's in the wine, right? Like, it's a very nice wine.
Yeah, well, I was very, very curious. I wanted to know, well, for my father, which, you know, he had some reasons as well. For him, the best you could get from a Malvasia would be shown in a naturally sweet, right? But I was very curious about what was this Malvasia that we grow here for generations, like in a dry wine that I, you know, I'm not such a sweet drinker of wine. So in a, with a meal, right?
Yes.
Of our own. So yeah. So this is 4 years later, the fourth vintage after that, and this is very special for me because there are three plots here, Emily. And as we spot yesterday in the winery, we during this time I've already spot what's a fantastic area for growing and the yeah. taste of.
I mean
some
that
of
one amazing days. Barrel was just like, I mean they were all great, but there was one that was just like super yeah. galactic.
See, very nice.
Yeah.
See, well, in this case, it's all in here, all mixed yes. here anyway. But this vintage, 2018, was quite crazy. For you know, in terms of fermentation in my winery, so this fermentation lasted
yep.
or 9 months. The okay. alcoholic fermentation, so that it got dry. So was and when I by the time that I bottled this just before the vintage that was at my door already, I was in a rush to bottle that to make a space for the new vintage. So it was quite blind. So it's been. And I surprised the evolution of this, and we were talking yesterday about the profile
yes,
of this wine compared to the
previous vintages as well. And what I love about this is, I mean, it literally smells like fresh pineapple on the nose, and there's this again, it is aromatic, obviously, but then on the palate, like so saline and so much length. There's just so much energy in the wine, actually.
Energy, I would yeah. yes, I would go for that. See that feeling that yeah. see,
and I'm always fascinated with wines that have like distance or a difference between how they smell and taste, because it kind of lures you back for another sip, because you smell and then you taste and it's different, so that it feels like there's kind of more to discover in a way in the glass. Yeah, I mean, and also just in terms of things that I could pair this with food wise or stuff I want to cook. I cook like quite a lot of Middle Eastern food, actually.
Ah, yes.
And I think with all those like quite nice. Bold flavours,
nice.
Something like this.
Nice. I would love to taste that with that. Yes.
Do you know what I think? Even like you know, like the Moroccan dish, like the like chicken preserved lemon olive tagine.
Oh, nice. No, it,
something with that with like the kind of saltiness, but like yeah, I think it could be really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Very, very Moorish. Very, very Moorish. Gwen would be pretty jealous of this one, I think, because she loves aromatics and dry aromatics as well. So
see?
She's got a bit of a soft spot for anything with any kind of aroma. Give her to Nina Gwen. Mm. I mean, I'm drinking it because of your wines are so difficult to get hold of. I don't know when I'm going to get another glass of them. Feels like I can't waste.
Thank you. Yeah. So, finally.
I know, yeah. So, this is the 17, so that's the cork that I've put in the wrong bottle. Yeah, okay. So, we've got 2017 Malvasia.
Naturally sweet.
Yeah, so you said it's called Natural...
Naturalmente dulce.
Yeah, there you go.
Dulce.
Yeah.
Just a literal translation to the Spanish. Naturally sweet. And yeah, this is the most traditional one that I made. And here, yes, I deliberately maintain the old way of making this wine.
So it's a late harvest.
Late harvest, so the bunch ripes in the plant.
Mm.
So that means that the ripening is not homogeneous in every plant. So that means that we do at least We go twice at least every plant. Normally,
so
going
to the vineyard two or three times, picking the super ripe grapes, and then if they're not ready, you'll go back at a later time.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. And so for these seven hundred liters were three harvests, and so three times pressing the result of those harvests in the lagar, so that's macerated there, left a couple of days. That's something that varies, depends on the yeasts that year, how strong they are, how fast they wake up. So once the fermentation kind of is wanting to start, I just press it, and that's it. That's it.
I mean,
it's a spontaneous fermentation, like everything else, of course. But this is starts and finishes whenever it finishes. So that's why it's so important, the picking day.
Yes.
You're deciding so many things as usual with that decision.
Yep.
And so it's here. You don't want an undrinkable sweet wine, because you know, here we're talking about a slope that is southwest exposed, so that can be a lot of sun during the year.
Yes.
So one have to be careful with that. You don't want a super jam thing that is lacking freshness, etc. Even when the Malvasia is a variety that maintains its beautiful natural acidity even in a late harvest, but it's still, there is this balance, right? So again, like a full, you know, a very oxidative kind of maceration as well. No control of temperature,
but it's not super nutty or anything, like it's still, you know, quite a lot of fruit there and all of those lovely sweet flavors. And what's amazing about it is like just the acidity, again, still very, very good.
Yeah, this vintage I was very happy because I couldn't make this wine since 2013.
Okay.
So here we are, 17. This is my first naturally sweet Malvasia on my own. And what I like about this particular Malvasia is these dry leaves and different notes that I not normally found in my other previous vintages or family vintages. So nice.
It's delicious. They're all delicious. They're dangerous wines. You can get your hands on them, buy as many as you can. But
I keep on saying nice, and it's not nice because of the wine. I keep on saying nice because I celebrate the journey of making such wines, and also with time, and every time getting to understand better the character of them, the uniqueness of the year and everything, right? So that's why I keep on saying nice, sorry.
I mean, I'm saying nice because the wines are bloody nice. And it's nice to be drinking them with you. So
thank you.
And what about, like, I mean, these are your core range, and you make, as you mentioned, you make the Listan Blanco, the Albio Criollo, the Listan Prieto, Listan Negro, and sometimes a single plot Negro Mole as well.
Yes, and sometimes a single plot Bujariego or Diego as well. Yes, and then the Clarete.
Yes.
See?
That Clarete that just is hiding from me. Can't get my hands on it. Best wine ever. But I think so that's the full range. And is there any other grape variety or anything, any particular wine style that is on your mind for the future that you're like, I really want to do that at some point, or not really, or you want to focus more on this, or I don't know.
At the moment, Emily, I'm very focused in wine growing. I mean, we are struggling with a climate emergency, right?
Yes.
We feel it like this, and we
due to the lack of water on the island,
noticing. Yes, for years already. Yes, so I'm now that's where I'm focused, and So winemaking for me now is just winemaking, because I pick every year thing, and I'm happy to get what I get, from them. But my first duty now is to make the right decisions so that I can make the plots survive these conditions. Yeah. So that's my main.
Yeah, I mean, it looks quite difficult today when we saw sort of quite a few of the vineyards. You could see that.
Yeah.
It's becoming an issue, and and like you said, it came as a surprise how quickly actually the impact or how it's obviously been happening for a long time. So you thought you had a bit more time to put measures in place. So it's
I think but I would extend that reflection to how we live as well. I mean, we think we have time to adapt to what's coming or what's going on or what's and well, to me, it's been
Have is now.
And also with my vines here in an island like this, and maybe it's a more fragile area than, you know, maybe we're talking to people that is settled in Central Europe, and when I go there, I don't see that much the problem of water, for example. I mean, in some areas of the planet, we live it, we feel it, and we struggle with the problems in a more strong way. But that's coming. That's how I see it. That's coming gradually.
Yes. It'll impact everyone everywhere. It's just that some people will feel it first and feel it differently.
And differently. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think we can all relate to that. So in my experience here, what surprised me. Was that it's like in 2 years' time, and we haven't seen these pictures, but we've been there today, and I'm going to show them to you later. But it's incredible. You have those vines that look vigorous and healthy, etc. And 2 years after, you just see them struggling like heavily. But when I say that, is you know, counting dead plants, which is very rare in an area with plants so well adapted, ungrafted,
deep rooted,
yes,
yeah,
no over exploded or whatever. Yeah. So that's
I mean, even I saw in Berlin actually this year the Green Party were going around watering all the trees because it'd been such a dry spring, and it had been a continuously dry springs for many years, that they were actively watering all the local trees because they could see that this was going to start really impacting those. And that's even in Berlin.
Yes, and how those como se diría, facts move. I mean, you can have now hail, yes, in some other time of the year, heavier. Yes.
And then at a more vulnerable time of the year when you've got fruit that can be destroyed, for example, right?
Yes, so in different ways this is affecting us all. And yes, I think we all live like if we had time to adapt and
what we need to adapt now. Well, that's quite a lot to ponder on actually, isn't it? No, I'm going to be thinking about it a lot over the coming weeks a lot. Yeah, I think this has been absolutely fascinating, and thank you again for taking the time.
Thank you. It's been
a pleasure. I know you were a bit shy to do it, so I'm really happy that you came on the podcast.
Thank you.
And thanks for sharing such beautiful wines, and I'm so excited to continue to see what comes out of these beautiful little parcels of land in the future.
Thank you.
Until next time. Ha ha ha.